Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are so glad to have you with us. Today, we're shifting gears a little.
We are.
Usually, we take a really broad look at a topic, but today we are on a very specific mission. We've pulled together this massive stack of resources, articles, syllabus notes, all focused entirely on topic Area 3, data and testing.
That's right. And look, if you are a student out there, specifically prepping for the R050 final exam, this deep dive is, well, it's practically written for you. This is the real nuts and bolts of the curriculum.
But even if you aren't sitting an exam, I'd argue you should stick around.
Oh, definitely.
Because what we're talking about today is, I mean, it's essentially the nervous system of the modern world. Yeah. We're peeling back the curtain on how the digital world actually functions.
It is the nervous system, absolutely. Mm-hmm. When people hear data and testing, their eyes glaze over a bit. They think it's just spreadsheets and, you know, checklists and boring admin work. But that's such a mistake.
I want to start with a question for you and for everyone listening. Have you ever just stopped to think about the invisible life cycle of a single piece of information? Like, how does a random number just floating in the ether eventually turn into a decision that changes a business or maybe even changes your entire day?
And more importantly,
and how do we make sure that number doesn't break the entire system along the way?
That is the core question. You know, when we look at IT curriculums, especially something like the R050, it's so easy to get bogged down in just memorizing definitions.
Right. Just rote learning.
And you need to know your definitions. Absolutely. You need the marks. But the real value here is understanding that flow. Mm. How do we take some raw input, store it safely, check that it's not garbage, and then prove the whole machine works?
Exactly. So here's our roadmap for this deep dive. We're going to start at the very beginning, the alchemy of turning raw data into actual information.
Okay.
Then we'll look at the hunt, how we actually collect it. We'll move on to gatekeeping, how we keep it accurate with validation and verification.
A crucial one.
Then the vault, where do we put it all? And finally, the ultimate test proving it actually works.
It sounds like quite a journey, but it's a logical one. Every step really depends on the last.
So let's jump right into section one. The sources all call this information and data. And I think a lot of people use those words interchangeably. I know I do sometimes.
Everyone does.
Well, they send me the data or send me the info. And I mean the same thing. Is there actually a difference?
There is a massive difference. In fact, in the IT world, and especially for this exam, confusing them is a cardinal sin. If you write data is information on your paper, you are losing marks instantly.
Wow.
Think of it this way. Data is the raw material. It's
right.
Unprocessed. It's just text, numbers, symbols. On its own, it has no meaning at all. It's unorganized.
Okay, let's unpack that. The source material uses a great example, the number 15.
Right. Take the number 15. If I just write 15 on a sticky note and stuck it to your monitor, what is it?
Well, it's just 15. It could be anything. It could be my age, if I were very, very lucky.
Ah.
It could be the date, the number of cars in the car park.
Exactly. The number of petals on a flower. Until we apply meaning to it, it is useless. It's just potential.
So if data is the raw material, information is what happens when we, what, cook it?
Precisely. Information is data plus meaning. But the source material gives us a really specific formula that students really need to memorize. It's deeper than just adding meaning.
Oh.
The formula is information equals data plus meaning plus structure plus context.
Ooh, structure and context. Those feel like the secret ingredients. Let's break those down. The source uses a date example, right? 050124.
Yes, so 050124 is the data. Just a string of numbers. If I tell you it's a date, that's the meaning. Now we're getting somewhere. Okay. But then we add structure. We add those slash separators so it reads 050124. Now it's, you know, readable to a human eye.
Okay, so that's structure. But what about context? Why is that separate?
This is where it gets really interesting and where real world errors happen all the time. Context is everything. If you're in the UK, 050124 is the 5th of January, 2024. But if the context is, this is a US formatted date, suddenly that same string of numbers is May 1st, 2024.
That is a huge difference, especially if that date is a deadline for an assignment or an expiration date on medicine or something.
Exactly. Without context, information can be completely misinterpreted. So for the exam, you have to remember that equation. Data plus meaning plus structure plus context, information.
Got it. Okay, before we leave the raw data behind, we have to touch on data types. The sources list a few specific categories that come up. I'm going to throw them at you. You give me the quick definition and maybe why we care. Ready?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Alphanumeric.
Okay, so that's any sequence with only letters and numbers. Think of a license plate or a username like a Richards 3. It doesn't usually include symbols like question marks or exclamation points.
So how's that different from text?
Text is broader. Text is the catch-all. It can contain any character on your keyboard. Letters, numbers, symbols, spaces, the lot. If you're writing an email address or a full sentence, that's text.
Okay, next one. Boolean. I've always loved the sound of that word.
It's the simplest one, but you could argue it's the most powerful for computers. It represents one of two options. True or false, yes or no. One or zero.
So why bother? Why not just type yes?
Efficiency. Storing a single one or zero takes up almost no space compared to the word yes, and computers can process it instantly. Think of a checkbox for invoice paid. It's either done or it isn't.
Nice. Okay, next up, date.
Pretty self-explanatory, but the format is what matters. DDMMYYYY. The computer needs to know it's a date so it can do calculations like, you know, figuring out how many days are between two points in time.
And finally, numeric. But the source breaks this down even more, doesn't it? You can't just say number.
No, you have to be specific. You have integers, which are whole numbers.
Yeah.
You'd use this for things you can't split, like 5 items sold. You can't sell 5.3 items.
Right.
Then you have decimal or real numbers, which have a decimal point, like 4.3 kilometers or height, 1.8 meters.
And I assume currency and percentage are just variations of that?
Yes, and they have their own special formatting rules. Being specific about which numeric type you need is a classic exam question. If it asks for number of sisters and you select decimal, you'll probably lose the mark. You can't have half a sister.
Good point. Okay, so we know what data is. Now we need to go get it. Which brings us to section two, the hunt, or, you know, more formally, data collection methods.
Right. And again, we have a major split here. Two broad types, primary and secondary. The distinction is all about ownership.
The difference being?
Primary data collection is when you or your organization collect the data yourselves. You are the source. It's fresh.
Okay.
Secondary data collection is when you use data that someone else has already collected. You're borrowing it.
Okay. Let's look at primary methods first. The source lists three big ones: email, online questionnaires, and interviews. Let's talk email. I send out a form link by email. Why would I do that?
Well, it's fast. You can send it all over the world in seconds. It's also trackable. You can often see if people opened it. And the responses are electronic, so they can be automatically collated. You're not sitting there typing things up by hand.
But there has to be a catch, right?
Think about your own inbox. Junk folders. Spam filters. It is so easy to ignore an email. Response rates can be terribly low. Plus, you're assuming the recipient has the digital skills to even respond.
True. Okay, what about online questionnaires?
These are generally great for getting high response rates compared to paper. If you hand someone a clipboard on the street, they might just walk away.
Yeah.
But people are much more likely to click a few buttons online. And again, no handwriting to try and decipher.
Oh, deciphering handwriting is the worst. But surely there's a downside.
Design time. Building a really effective digital survey takes a while. You have to make sure the questions aren't confusing. And obviously, you need devices to complete them in the first place.
Right. Now, the third one feels very different. Interviews. This is face-to-face or maybe over video. This feels like the premium option.
It is the personal touch. The biggest advantage here is that you can see people's reactions. You can have follow-up questions.
Oh, okay.
If I ask you, do you like this app?
Yeah.
And you sort of hesitate before saying yes, I can ask, why did you hesitate?
Yeah.
You get much richer, more considered responses.
And I imagine it's a nightmare to organize.
It is. It's so time consuming to arrange. It takes a long time to actually do.
Yeah.
And then analyzing the data is hard.
Yeah.
How do you put a 30-minute conversation into a spreadsheet? It's much harder than a yes-no answer.
So that's primary. Now, secondary, using other people's work. The source mentions books and magazines, websites, and government statistics.
Okay, so books and magazines. The pro here is reliability. Usually a book has been edited, proofread, checked by a publisher. You can generally trust it more than some random blog. However, they're static. The second a book is printed, that data is frozen in time. If you're researching the latest smartphone specs, a book from 2 years ago is completely useless.
That makes sense. What about websites? That feels like the go-to for everyone now.
It is. Huge volume of information, so easy to access. But I call this the Wild West.
Uh-huh.
Reliability is a massive, massive issue. Anyone can publish anything. Bias is a real problem. You have to be so careful checking your sources.
And finally, government statistics, like census data.
Usually seen as very reliable and often free, which is great.
Yeah.
But the data sets can be overwhelming. They are huge. You might have to wade through gigabytes of Excel sheets just to find the one statistic you actually need.
So pick your poison carefully.